Imagine actually loving everything you have in your closet. I'm getting a little closer to that experience the more I get from Honeylove. I've learned I can really rely on the comfort, fit, quality, and look of Honeylove no matter what. And it seems like they think of everything we might want but didn't know existed. The Legging 2.0, for example, has it all. Comfort, function, and style. Smooth, soft fabric, hidden shaping panels that make me feel extra supported and confident, sheer-proof fabric so I have no worries, side pockets for the convenience I need, a super cute look, and more. And I love that I can wear them out and about, around the house, or to work out. And Honeylove addresses all of the typical complaints about bras and shapewear, too. All of Honeylove's products make everything I wear feel better. So yes, Honeylove has you covered for the everyday look, workouts, weddings, and more. Go check it out. Treat yourself to the best bras, shapewear, leggings, and more on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/newsworthy. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/newsworthy. After your purchase, they ask you where you heard about them, so please support our show and tell them we sent you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it. Today is Thursday, August 29th. What to know today about Hurricane Dorian and its potential impact on Florida, and the latest person to leave the 2020 presidential race. Plus, Pinterest has new rules, Apple is apologizing, and a viral chicken sandwich. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. What was Tropical Storm Dorian is now officially a hurricane, and forecasters say it could get even stronger by the time it hits the U.S. mainland. As of early this morning, it's a Category 1 storm. By this weekend, it could strengthen to a Category 3. For now, the Weather Channel reports Dorian is nearing Turks and Caicos and parts of the Bahamas. After that, it could move toward Florida by the end of the Labor Day weekend. In fact, Florida's governor has now declared a state of emergency, so there are some extra resources on hand just in case. And the AP reports he's telling everyone on the state's East Coast to have a week's worth of supplies ready, like food and water. Keep in mind, it's also possible this storm could take a different path. AccuWeather says it might move towards South Carolina or in the other direction to the Gulf of Mexico. Already, Dorian caused some damage and power outages in the U.S. and British Virgin Islands, as well as parts of Puerto Rico. But Puerto Rico dodged the worst of it. Dorian did not make landfall there, which is good news since the island is still recovering from a major hurricane that hit 2 years ago. Also of note, President Trump freed up federal resources to help Puerto Rico in case there was a lot of damage. CNN says FEMA has about 3,000 people in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands right now. But Trump also tweeted some criticism yesterday, saying people in Puerto Rico should tell federal officials thank you, quote, not like last time. He specifically called out the, quote, incompetent mayor of San Juan. The mayor responded by saying President Trump's comments stand in the way of relief efforts. The two have not gotten along for a while. It's official. The next Democratic presidential debate will only have 10 candidates on stage. That's half the number who qualified for the first round of debates. The one next month had stricter requirements that had to be met by last night. And so one of the candidates who did not make the cut just dropped out of the 2020 race. The New York Times reports Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York says she's no longer running. She says she'll support whoever becomes the Democratic nominee in the hopes of replacing President Trump. President Trump had something to say about it, too. He tweeted, "It's a sad day for Democrats," and, quote, "I'm glad they never found out she was the one I was really afraid of." The third Democratic debate is set for September 12th on ABC. A surprise and controversial decision in the UK. Prime Minister Boris Johnson is shutting down Parliament for about a month, right before the UK is scheduled to leave the European Union. In other words, lawmakers will have a lot less time to debate and negotiate a Brexit deal. Remember, the UK is set to leave the European Union on October 31st. Many lawmakers assumed they would not take their typical break so they could work on the whole Brexit thing. Not anymore. The Prime Minister asked the Queen to close Parliament from early September until mid-October, and she approved. Critics say Johnson is doing this on purpose to cut them out of the Brexit process. Some even call it a, quote, constitutional outrage. There's already a petition with a million signatures, and some lawmakers say they'll challenge this in court. Johnson just says it's been one of the longest legislative sessions in history and needs to come to an end. Keep in mind, if Parliament cannot agree on a deal by the deadline at the end of October, the UK may leave the EU without a plan in place, which could take a toll on trade and the economy there. 16-year-old climate activist Greta Thunberg sailed for 2 weeks across the Atlantic Ocean from Sweden and is finally in New York. She'll be speaking at the UN Climate Action Summit next month. But she was determined to get to New York without producing any carbon. And that means no planes. Instead, she took a zero-emissions sailboat. We've talked about Thunberg before. She's the same girl who encouraged students around the world to strike from school to raise awareness about climate change. She's also been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. All right, we have more news ahead, but first, thank you to our sponsor this week, Blinkist. With social media and work and family and whatever else, you may not think you have the time to sit down and read a book or develop yourself. Well, Blinkist is making it easier for busy people who still want to learn from books without needing to read the entire thing for every single book you're interested in. Blinkist is the only app that takes the best key takeaways from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down for you into just 15 minutes so you can read or listen. Blinkist has a big library of books as well. So when I hear about a book that might be interesting, I can pull up the app right then and there on my phone and get reading or listening and learning within minutes. You've heard me talk about the book Factfulness, 10 Reasons We're Wrong About the World and Why Things Are Better Than You Think. That's available on Blinkist. And there are many other popular ones as well, like The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. And right now, Blinkist has a special offer. Go to Blinkist.com/news to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/news to start your free 7-day trial. Blinkist.com/news. Now back to the news. Pinterest is taking another step to make sure users get accurate information about vaccines. From now on, it will only return expert results. When users search for medical-related topics, The Verge reports Pinterest will only provide results from major public health organizations like the World Health Organization and the CDC. The goal is to stop the spread of medical misinformation, the kind that's been blamed for parents not getting their kids vaccinated. Earlier this year, Pinterest already stopped all results from vaccine-related search terms, so this seems to be the next step. And other social media sites have struggled with this issue as well. For example, Facebook removes groups and pages that share any anti-vaccine misinformation. Apple is saying sorry and promising changes. The company says it regrets allowing contractors to listen in on some conversations customers have with the voice assistant Siri, especially since those customers never gave the okay. Remember, Apple says they allowed this in the past for quality control to make sure Siri was responding to people correctly. Then word got out and Apple put that practice on pause. Now Apple says the actual audio recordings will no longer be kept by default. Instead, Apple employees will review computer-generated transcripts. Also, customers will get to decide if their audio files will be shared with Apple or not. And for those who do opt in, Apple says only its employees, not contractors, will listen. Amazon's popular home security system called Ring has partnered with 400 law enforcement agencies across the U.S. The Washington Post reports Ring has various deals with police departments, but it basically allows them to quickly request videos Ring cameras have recorded. That said, police can't see any live footage, and homeowners can still deny police access if they want. This is the first time Ring has agreed to release info about its police partnerships. Some see it as a great tool to keep neighborhoods safe. But others are pretty worried about the privacy implications. Some legal experts and privacy advocates say it's dangerous that both the company and police have so much access, and it could put innocent people in danger of extra surveillance just because a Ring customer gets suspicious. After the Washington Post story came out, Ring released a map showing where the police partnerships exist. There's a new YouTube website just for kids that will be available later this week. YouTube already has the YouTube Kids app, but there was no option on the web for kids to get a filtered version of YouTube. That's about to change. TechCrunch says it's likely happening now because of an upcoming settlement with the federal government. The FTC could force YouTube to direct kids under 13 years old to a separate website. So this is the response. And once it's available, CNET says the site will filter videos into three different age groups: preschool, ages 4 and under, younger, ages 5 to 7, and older for kids between 8 and 12. The new kids' website doesn't seem to be live just yet, but is expected, quote, later this week. Have you heard about this one yet? Popeye's chicken sandwich has been one of the latest social media sensations. The new fried chicken sandwiches are so popular that Popeye's says they're completely sold out nationwide. People waited in long lines and even caused traffic jams just to get one. CBS News says the sandwich launched a couple of weeks ago and then quickly went viral. at least in part because of some tongue-in-cheek tweets with competitors. Popeyes, Chick-fil-A, and Wendy's had some back and forth online. But otherwise, it's all about the reviews. Popeyes says it's working with a supplier to bring the sandwich back as soon as possible, and they say once it's back, it'll be back for good. Forbes magazine has already called Taylor Swift the highest paid entertainer, so it makes sense that she's now topping the list as the highest paid woman in music. Forbes says she made $185 million this year, mostly because of the sale of her previous album and tour. Number two on the list, Beyoncé, who reportedly made $81 million. Rihanna, Katy Perry, and Pink rounded out the top five. And that's it for the main news today, but it's now time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know, only on Thursdays after the news. This month marks the 400th anniversary of the first enslaved people arriving in America. It was August 1619. In fact, the New York Times Magazine dedicated an issue this month to that historic time and called it the 1619 Project. One of the people asked to write for that issue is Mary Elliott. She's the curator of American slavery at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture, and she joined me to share a little bit of the history of slavery and why it's important to remember today. Hi, Mary. Thanks so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, Erica.
So let's start in August of 1619. The first enslaved Africans were brought to Virginia. Can you tell us a few key things about that journey and what really first happened when that ship arrived?
Slavery was not new. Colonization was not new. And these nation states were competing for power. They were competing for economic power, global power. So keep in mind that the first English colony, successful English colony, it's in Virginia, 1607. The first successful tobacco crop in that area was 1612. And then you have this ship come in 1619. And a choice was made, and that choice was to be involved in a transaction, a sale. They were bought for victuals, which means they were bought for food. So the key thing is there was a value in these men, women, and children. The buyer and the seller knew they were of value. And unlike an indentured servant, they were bought. They didn't sign an indenture contract. Now, what happens after that, we have to look at custom, we have to look at case law, and we have to look at statute. But in that moment, we know that it was pivotal, that there was a transaction, and at the heart of it were people. There was a human cost with it.
Slavery went on for more than 246 years in the U.S. This was passed on from generation to generation. It was inherited.
The forms of slavery prior to that time, it was not like that. In Africa, yes, there was slavery that took place, but it was a result of warfare. And you could be an enslaved person, but you could still move up in society. Your children didn't inherit your status. You could gain your freedom. And people even had respect for some enslaved people who were in a certain higher rank. But this was completely different. This was commercialized and racialized, and your status as an enslaved person was inherited.
And what myths are there or misconceptions about what happened when slavery ended?
Reconstruction, while slavery ended de jure, in terms of the law, the 13th Amendment, the end of slavery with the exception of if you commit a crime. These Reconstruction amendments that were put in place to, one, end slavery altogether, two, provide citizenship and due process with the 14th Amendment, and three, provide the right to vote and to be civically engaged with the 15th Amendment and the right to hold office. You still had a nation that had a cross-section of people, some of which were not ready for change. And so you had people who were in control, who created these black codes. So remember I said that de jure, the law, the amendments to the Constitution ended slavery. But locally, you had many states that were trying to put the practice of slavery back in place without calling it slavery. You have black codes that restricted the abilities of African Americans, restricted their freedoms. You have people who now they had to get on with their lives and they were back in the fields because they signed these tenant contracts or they were sharecroppers and they were living back in the same slave cabins, but they were working the fields hoping that they got paid the right amount of money at the end of the season, or that they could protect the chastity of their daughters, who were often taken in the middle of the night by night riders. You have the Klan arise, I believe, around 1968. So this system that was reinforced, the system of slavery that was reinforced by violence and terror, this system of keeping people of African descent, African Americans, in their so-called place. And in this instance, their place was seen as in the field generating profit. These systems were put back in place in many ways. But what's really powerful is African Americans fought against it. So while this violence, this system of violence and terror is going through, they still fought against it. They fought to gain an education. They fought to develop communities, to practice their faith. They fought against these systems that also tried to prevent their abilities to vote. You have union leagues that pop up where men are marching through the streets with drums and guns, calling other Black men out to vote, to enforce their right to vote. So this is very important to see what was going on, the achievements of African Americans, what they were fighting against, and how the nation was in transition, and how there was a struggle against that transition.
And what do we need to be talking more about now, 400 years after that first ship arrived in Virginia?
The biggest thing I say, Erica, about thinking about today and this particular moment, it is very important that it speaks to the choices that were made at the beginning of what became the nation. And so a choice was made on that day, August 20th, 1619, to commodify African men, women, and children, to dehumanize them, and to set what became the United States on a path that led towards profit, power, but came at a human cost. And so what we should be reflecting on today is, how do we want this nation to be defined at this moment? History is supposed to empower us, to help us make better choices, to help us reflect on life. And so this gives us an opportunity to pause and think about where we've been, where we are, and where we still have to go, and how we're going to get there.
And you can read more about our guest and the New York Times 1619 Project in today's show notes. Just go to thenewsworthy.com, click episodes, and look for today's date. That's also where you'll find all the sources and links to stories we talked about throughout this episode. Thank you so much for listening. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 in the morning every weekday, so we'll chat again tomorrow. Have a great day.